Come take my hand and see the world around you. The time is right, just let the light surround you. And step by step, you feel it coming alive. The feeling deep down inside, and you've got nothing to hide. To reach the top, you've gotta keep on moving. Don't let it stop, just gotta keep on moving. I know you're doing your best, you're stepping up from the rest. Just keep on passing the test.
Pleasant good evening to our TDN radio listeners at home in Dominica and the Caribbean region and the rest of the world. If it is Tuesday, it is time once again to get powered up with Untapped Potential with Dr. Simone right here on TDN Radio. So how are you doing this evening? I hope that your week is off to a fruitful and productive start as we look at the calendar, today being September 19th. Can you believe only one more week left in September? I certainly do not know where the time goes by, but as always, we remind ourselves that the time continues to speed along, whether we like it or not. So this is why it is so important that we get together here every Tuesday for Untapped Potential with Dr. Simone, where we get powered up and energized for the week ahead, and we remind ourselves of the important life goals that we have set out for ourselves. So as we look at the calendar, next week being the end of September, how are you doing with those goals? So are you making any strides? Have you created that to-do list of the things that you need to do to accomplish your goals? Have you been able to check off any of the items on those lists? So for example, if you're working on your weight, you're trying to probably lose a couple of pounds, you're trying to adapt a new lifestyle. Because as I say in my book, Push Past 10, the focus should always be on adapting a new lifestyle, which will result in losing the weight rather than simply focusing on losing the weight. Because when we focus on just losing the weight, we try to do all the shortcuts. We try to do the quick diets, the quick fixes, when in fact, what is needed to be able to lose weight and maintain a healthy lifestyle is to adjust your lifestyle. So for example, have you started walking more now that we see that the weather is cooling in many areas? Are you walking more? Are you trying to probably change what you're eating rather than eating fast food? You are preparing your meals ahead of time so that you know that when you get hungry, your meal is readily available. So many things to do with regards to changing our lifestyles. And again, if you're interested in meeting those weight loss goals, meeting that lifestyle change before the end of the year, there is still time. We're in September, we still have October, November, and December. So again, if you're interested, you can head on over to pushpast10.com, pushpast10.com, to grab a copy of Push Past 10. It's only 57 pages long, and it will give you a step-by-step guide in terms of adjusting your lifestyle. So again, thank you for being here for another episode of Untapped Potential. We have another great interview for you. As a matter of fact, we want to bring you, a program that we did with Dr. IP, Nurse Halima Thomas, and Nurse Rosie Felix, as we talked about what is going on at the Dominica China Friendship Hospital. So there's quite a crisis where on Wednesday of last week, we had doctors walking out. because the conditions at the hospital are just not favorable to healthcare. So we had a very engaging conversation on last Wednesday on that topic. So I'll bring you the first portion of that program this evening. And of course, I'll bring you the second portion of that program next week. But as we always like to do, we like to start the week off on a note of gratitude. So what are you grateful for this week? What are you grateful for today? And as I always say, if you can find nothing else to be grateful for, remember that you woke up this morning. So we continue to be grateful for life. We continue to be grateful for health, our family, our friends. Maybe we have jobs. And we're also grateful in my family because one of our family members is no longer in pain. You know, my cousin Alcest Williams, who was a wonderful teacher at the Convent High School in Dominica, the high school that I actually attended. She was a wonderful teacher. She was a wonderful person. She succumbed to cancer, to breast cancer in Dominica. And of course, another horror story from the hospital where she may have been misdiagnosed. So we are grateful that she has transitioned. She has crossed over and she is no longer in pain. So we pray that she will continue to rest in peace as well as everyone else who may have transitioned this week. So again, welcome to the program. We like to start off with a great song. So today we will bring you Raise Your Flag from Colin XP as we continue to celebrate Dominica, our beautiful island home, and we continue to work to advance Dominica in so many ways. So enjoy this number from Colin XP, a song entitled Raise Your Flag, and then stay tuned as we go right into the interview, the program on the state of the Dominica China Friendship Hospital and what it will take to ensure that it is indeed a state-of-the-art hospital. So stay tuned.
Just be wise, let the world hospital healthcare, what supplies and services should be available at a state-of-the-art hospital, what changes are needed to make the Dominica China Friendship Hospital into a state-of-the-art hospital. And, you know, I know that people are quick to say that we are crying down the country, but this evening we're going to take a very objective look, right? So we're going to take a very objective look. We're going to look at what traditionally we find in a state-of-the-art hospital, right? And we're going to compare it and see if those things exist in the Dominica China Friendship Hospital, and so we can draw a conclusion in terms of what changes are needed. So let us go back to our panel as they tell us what are some of the things we should expect to see in a state-of-the-art hospital. And don't forget, we are working on those 20 critical items that need immediate attention. Facebook, keep posting those comments. I see you, David Joseph, Hermelina. I see you, Eliza. I see you, Paula. I see you, Earl. So go ahead and share the live, because we have so many stories, so many incidents, and we want to be able to share this program with the hospital management board and share our concerns as one unit. So guys, let us talk about what we should expect when we talk about a state-of-the-art hospital. Anyone can feel free to jump in.
Well, I think the first thing we have to define is what is like best practices, like what is best practices in clinical, in the clinical environment. Mm-hmm. And basically it's how we go about taking care of the patient, the treatments and the interventions that result in the best possible outcome for the patient. And at the core of that, we talk about respect for patients, respect for patient autonomy in making their own decisions for themselves, respect in creating a model that is shared decision-making and that creates trust and professional patient relations.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you for that, Dr. Ipe.
Yeah, I'd maybe like to start with taking a look at this phrase that's been used for state of the art. I'd like to start there because most of the times that phrase is used connected to hospitals and healthcare, it's usually used not by healthcare professionals. It's usually used by somebody marketing something or politicians trying to impress us. So I think it's important that we try to get a clear understanding of what is meant by state of the art. Mm-hmm. And that would mean to me something that is innovative or new, cutting edge, and beyond what has been known to be the norm. And it is characterized by modern techniques and modern technology. So for me, that's what state of the art is. But talking about taking care of patients, I mean, I would prefer for us to function, for us to speak more about state-of-the-art care.
Okay.
Rather than state-of-the-art hospital. Mm-hmm. And what that would mean for me is that you would be applying what is innovative, what is cutting edge, and what is beyond the norm to the technology, the practices, and the health professionals in a healthcare institution. So state of the art doesn't just apply to me, doesn't just apply to equipment. It's state of the art care requires the practices in that hospital to be state of the art. Mm-hmm. Processes. State of the art requires the health professionals to be innovative, to be cutting edge, to be beyond the norm, or to be informed, to be up to date. So if we take that, put that in context with I don't even like to say it. To be honest, I don't like this Dominica-China friendship thing. But to the Dominica-China Friendship Hospital, then it means more than that, because the Dominica-China Friendship Hospital is now managed by a board or health authority. So that health authority must be state of the art if they're going to be able to get state of the art care for the patients. So that's where, to me, it starts. Now, if that board is not state of the art, I can't see how you're going to get state of the art care. Let's put it simply as that. Mm-hmm. Right now, today, there is no board running the hospital. Okay? It's a legal requirement that a board runs the hospital. The board hasn't been reappointed. So right now, we can't be talking about a state-of-the-art care or state-of-the-art hospital without a board.
So you're saying the hospital management board has not been reappointed?
No, as we speak. When it will be appointed, I do not know. Mm-hmm. So I just like to point that out and say that the term state-of-the-art is really a marketing ploy, it's a marketing tool. But because it's a marketing tool, over the years, it has legal implications in something they call patent and tort law. But what that means for healthcare professionals is that if you have your board or your ministry saying that you have a state-of-the-art hospital, there's a certain expectation that comes there. So it exposes you now to a greater liability. And I think that's something that the healthcare professionals within that institution should realize, that if you're talking about state of the art, it puts an implication on you medical legally, because that's an expectation that if I come to the Dominica China Friendship Hospital, I'd be here in the state of the art, I expect a minimum level of standard of care. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about standard of care. Standard of care is what Mrs. Abdullah referred to, in that in clinical practice, it's the standard of care that's important. It's the state of the art, as I say, is a marketing tool. And standard of care means that there's a professional obligations that the professionals have to meet on behalf of patients. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that if you fail to meet those expectations, there will be consequences. Or if you fail, or if you exceed those expectations, there will be benefits. So it's a sort of accountability. Mm-hmm. So for me, as a physician, I think that is maybe where a lot of the focus should be, from the clinical aspect of what happens to patients when they come into the institution. And maybe it would help us to move away from this marketing thing of state of the art, which in medicine really just seem to be only applied to the machines and the CT scan and the latest this and the latest that. But from a clinical hands-on, it's really about the standard of care. And if you don't have standard of care, minimum standard of care, then you can't have no state-of-the-art care.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even before you get to state-of-the-art care, my question, or what I think the country needs to self-interrogate on, what I think the health authorities and the healthcare professionals need to interrogate on behalf of the patients, is whether we have a minimum standard of acceptable care in Dominica at the main hospital.
Absolutely. Minimum standard of acceptable care. Yep, I'm making notes. Ms. Felix, go ahead.
Yes. The quality care, if we're talking of state of the art, and really, you know, I had that exact thought this afternoon, it should be state of the art patient care, mm-hmm. consumer care. That is where the emphasis should be. And, you know, as I prepared for this session, I revisited, you know, things that are you know, visited before. And I looked deliberately at what, you know, WHO had to say about quality care and outcomes. And it speaks about, if you're talking quality care or state-of-the-art patient care, it should be safe, it should be effective, efficient to the institution, it should be affordable, patient-centered. Too many times we're planning all the patient care and then we leave the patient out of the discussion. Not even the patient's feedback we want to entertain, because we label it as critical and half of the story when we don't give our other half. The care should be timely, equitable, and as well as the human aspect that is very important, respectful and compassionate. Now, if we must have a standard of care, as Dr. IPA said it, it is so important to have a process where we define the standard that we want and we maintain the standard that we want. How do we get our organization to rise to that standard and to maintain that standard? Of course, as humans, we never get it 100% perfection, but we should be able, with if we're calling ourselves state of the art, if we're offering that to healthcare consumers, which is all of us, we have a high expectation, and you can't blame us for complaining when we do not receive that high level state of the art equipment, building, and service. So the state of the art should be high in all aspects, not just the building and equipment, but the service and the standard of the service, and the patient should be at the center of it all the time.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Felix. So as we're going to dive right in and start talking about the 20 critical interventions that are needed immediately at the Dominica China Friendship Hospital, we focus already on the service, the quality of service that is required, including patient feedback. And one of the concerns I have as we talk about patient feedback is the ability of some of our patients to communicate. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't a lot of the staff at the hospital from Cuba? So we have Cuban staff and then we have Dominicans who speak no Spanish. So can we speak on that particular topic? Am I misguided when I think that there might be a miscommunication problem at the hospital?
No, you're not. The fact of the matter is that over the years, the Dominica has become dependent for its health professionals, especially within the hospital setting, on nationals from Cuba. Especially physicians and nurses, there's a process that requires what you call registration to practice. And as far back as maybe 20, how long ago was I on the medical board? It was a requirement that nationals or non-English speaking professionals who were going to be in contact with the public needed to have an interview in English to determine the extent to which it was felt they were capable of communicating in English because the basis of patient care is to be able to communicate to the patient. The first thing you do is take a history, which is you have to be able to take that history, and the patient has to be able to tell you what is going on with them, and then you question them. So, but over the years, that fundamental aspect of patient care, that minimum, has been undermined or overridden for considerations that I don't understand. And, there seemed to have been a dropping of that protection of the patient for whatever reason by the authorities responsible for getting patients registered, getting physicians whose mother tongue was in English registered. And that's tragic. And it's maybe one of the most injurious things to patients in Dominica, and not just to the patients, but even to those professionals themselves, who I think are being put in a very unfortunate circumstance, because there was once upon a time you would be interviewed, and if you weren't up to scratch from your English, not even your medical knowledge, you might have had to wait for 3 months and learn a little English and then be checked again by the medical board. I'm not aware to what extent that still happens. The evidence on the ground suggests that hardly happens, and that people are being registered who should not be registered because of the lack of proficiency in English.
Yeah, so and Nurse Felix and Nurse Thomas, feel free to jump in as well, because that begs a lot of questions in my mind. That begs the question of, are translators provided so that I'm already in so much pain? Now I'm trying to explain to you in English and you only speak Spanish. And it also speaks to our ability in Dominica to recruit and retain physicians. Think of all the medical schools we have in the Caribbean. I can think of Grenada. I can think of St. Martin. I know there are quite a few medical schools in Dominica. So that speaks to our ability to recruit and retain English-speaking physicians and nurses in the Caribbean. So just feel free to chime in on your thoughts on this particular concern.
Well, one of the things that we have not touched on in terms of the model of the healthcare system, in order for any model to be state of the art, there's a business component to it. And when you offer services, there has to be some kind of way to fund it. I believe Dr. IP did an interview on that already with someone. I don't remember with who. But he basically went over how the system needs to be funded and how we should be able to offer services at a reasonable cost to the consumer, which may include us initiating things such as insurance plans, et cetera, et cetera. So the result of not having that business model functioning, that's why you have people being recruited at a cheaper cost from other countries, so that those needs can be met. And healthcare worldwide is that we're facing a shortage with nurses and everything. So it's not unheard of that you import people from different countries. But like Dr. Ivy said, usually it comes with some kind of proficiency in the mother tongue of the people, or translation services are provided. So definitely we would need to consider that. It's not that they should never be able to come and work in Dominica. I think if we have a shortage and that's the only way we can fill it because our nurses are leaving, then we should, the institution itself as part of the healthcare model should incorporate translation services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's stay on that a little bit. Nurse Felix, let us also address the fact that we have a lot of elderly people in Dominica. We pride ourselves on 11 centenarians and, you know, growing population of elderly people. But think about it. Many of our elderly folks prefer to communicate in Creole. So now to me, it is a double barrier, because now here you have a patient, you know, the Spanish speaking person may have a little understanding of English, but my God, I promise you, they have zero understanding of our Creole language. So how much more of a barrier is it when we have an elderly patient going to the hospital who is fluent in English and in Creole? And it just brings back a very powerful interview I remember that Dr. IP did when he talked about one of the reasons that he went into medicine, and it stayed with me very profoundly, Dr. Ivy, it really touched me when you said that one of the reasons you went into medicine is you had an unfortunate experience where a foreigner was speaking in a very derogatory way to a Creole-speaking elderly. I don't know if it was a relative. I don't remember that part of the story. And you thought to yourself, I will never have this person go through another experience like this. But before you chime in, Dr. Ivy, because I want you to tell us about that experience, Nurse Felix, go ahead with your thoughts.
Yes, language barriers certainly increases risk for wrong diagnosis, because if you've gotten the history wrong, you're going to make a wrong diagnosis. And even when you get the diagnosis right, you have increased risk for medication errors. There's a lot of complaint about increased patient mortality, and the research proves that medication error, even by people who speak the same language, is high. Far less when you do not speak the same language. It's my understanding that the Spanish speaking professionals, and in particular the nurses, they look at something, they go Google it for the response, to convert, to translate. They hear something, they go to Google it, or they ask somebody before they document. And I've heard some patient stories too, where we've had some issues. Not all of them come to me, but I know there are many, because we now have Spanish speaking professionals, across the board. And yes, while some of them come through special arrangements through with government to government, they should meet the criteria of being proficient in the language, because that would increase your ability to be efficient and competent. Mm-hmm. Also, the international rights for patients speaks to providing a translator if your care is being provided by someone who is not speaking your language.
Yeah, because let's face it, when our Dominican students go to Cuba, the first thing they have to learn is Spanish, because their education is in Spanish. So why isn't there reciprocity where the Spanish-speaking professionals, and again, we welcome them to our shores, but they are given English as a second language so that we can improve communication? Dr. Pascal, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd just like to add to that the ability to exchange your symptoms, or to share your symptoms and your complaints with someone who understands you, it's also fundamental to your care, your confidence that you're going to get better. So that is undermined from the outset. So because patients get better if they have confidence, and if they have confidence in first in their provider, and they have confidence in the service, you get better quicker if you have confidence in what you've been, who's taking care of you, or what treatment you're getting. Mm-hmm. So that's fundamental. So if from the outset your first contact with the service, it's something that already puts up your back, that already undermines your confidence, and so immediately that has implications for your morbidity and your mortality. It has implications for costing. When you should be out of the hospital in 3 days, you end up staying 5 days because you started off on the wrong foot, and all these types of things. So it's crucial, and I think it is something that the people who manage the system need to be taken seriously. And because, again, if you're going talking about state of the art means your professionals must be state of the art. So they must be able to talk two or three languages. They might have to be able to talk Chinese, just on another type of thing. So I think it's very crucial. And for me, it's particularly important, because that's how I ended up going to do. That's the story Simone is talking about. I ended up going to specialize in ENT. It was a similar situation where an elderly lady was in the clinic with the ENT specialist, and I was in the clinic at the time, and none of them couldn't communicate. And well, I'm from Marigot, and I couldn't help out in the Creole either. And it was really embarrassing to everyone that he shouted at her. And I just decided from that day on, as long as I was alive, that wasn't going to happen in Dominica for ENT services again. So that's how I actually went. And I had to spend almost 9 months, 6 to 9 months, coming up to scratch in France, in French, to be able to even start to specialize. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying it is really disturbing to me when you get all these stories about patients who cannot understand and patients complaining. They ask them, what did they tell you? And stuff like that. And then you know that once upon a time that it was never like that. So that means the standards have dropped. The standard of care has dropped. So you can't convince me it's what state of the art care. It's because this just the minimum standard of communication isn't there. So I think that's a priority, or that should be a priority for the authorities at the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you for that. Let me come to you, Nurse Thomas, as we start talking about the important role, of course, of staffing. So we hear about the nurses, the very limited contracts. Well, let us talk about the implications for morale. Well, let us talk about how resources, our human resources, are being stretched thin, because now we're seeing that not only the same staff going to provide services at the Dominica China Friendship Hospital, but now we're hearing implications that same staff may be required to provide services at the Marigot Hospital, because there's been a lot of pressure on the government over the fact that the Marigot Hospital has been constructed the last 2 years and it's never been open. So let us talk about the implications of staffing as we look at this 20 critical interventions, the things that we need to address immediately at the hospital. So what are your views on staffing?
So staffing also is also a very critical component, perhaps in the top three, yes. I would say. During COVID, we had situations where nurses had up to 8 patients, and we were thinking that was crazy. And I'm hearing that there are nurses that may have 15 patients now at the hospital or more. I'm not sure, that's hearsay. But I find that very scary that one nurse would be taking care of that many people. I know from a nursing point of view that even 6 patients, which is our cap here in New Jersey, it's a lot. I find that my best practices are done when I have a 1 to 4. When I have 4 patients for the day, I feel like I can do everything for them. I can do all their vitals. I can take care of them. I can listen to their story. I can get more information from them that may be critical to their case. And it also reduces medication errors. We just spoke about medication errors. Mm-hmm. 96,000 people in the U.S. die of medication errors. And that's from English speaking to English speaking. So can you imagine, we're in a system and we're having the barrier to communication. That's one factor leading to medication and errors and wrong diagnosis. Now we have staffing. And I'm telling you, there's no way a nurse can function properly with more than 6 patients. 6 is like a cap. 6 is like you're breaking my neck. I feel like 4 to 5, I can handle 5 on a critical day. So I feel like what's happening in Dominica is because the nurses are not being paid or compensated for their expertise. They have no other way of supporting their family than to leave. And you cannot tell me in the 20th century with all that is available to us, we boast of how much we've gotten from the Citizen by Investment program, that we cannot raise the salary for nurses, doctors, teachers, etc. I think like these people definitely need to be compensated more, or else we're going to lose them. We're going to lose the expertise, which is going to break down in the communication barriers, and it's going to filter out to every other facet of the healthcare model. So to me, critical staffing is very, very, very important. And it's something that the authorities need to take a closer look at. Like I said, I'm not against other people coming into our system, but we do need to, it's very simple. I mean, I have people that cannot speak the language when I have them as a patient. And we just pull up an iPad and we log into a Spanish speaker, or we even have Haitian Creole. We have all kinds of languages, and that's what we do. And so to me, those services can be bought. So that's a fix right there. Staffing, that can be fixed. We need to pay our nurses more. I was baffled that what I make in 1 month as a nurse here in the US, not even a month, what I make in probably 2 weeks is the salary of a nurse for an entire year in Dominica. So that's a major gap.
Absolutely. And Nurse Felix, as I come to you, you know, and I think that speaks to some of the issues we see with customer service at the hospital, because while we might say, well, that is not an excuse, they should still be professional. When you have nurses who are overwhelmed, and they are human beings, right? When we're listening to the ratios that Nurse Thomas is telling us about, versus what we are seeing in Dominica, it provides the space where people are going to be frustrated and fortunately not able to provide the best in customer service. So what are your thoughts on that? Staffing and the extent to which the nurses are stretched, the fact that the contracts are very limited, and also the implications for morale in the hospital in general.
Yes, Dr. Matthew, the nurse-patient ratio has been a sub point for, I would say, over two decades. Because when I came into nursing, and I'm talking 80s, we're talking about a ratio of one nurse to, and you said it correctly, in fact, one nurse to 10 patients, one to 10. And the nurse manager is also assigned to a number of patients. And it is not for lack of bringing the issue to the attention of the authorities. It is also not as a result of lack of nurses being trained on Dominica, because right now we have two institutions, you know, training nurses and creating the environment for your nurses and your midwives to stay. So even in our maternity section, where you have, if a woman is laboring, she should have one midwife to that one woman, and especially if this person is being induced, where the monitoring is more strict than if the person is going through, is having a natural labor and they moving about. And so that is where the problem is, and the attitude is is heartbreaking, because we hear comments like, well, let them go if they want. We hit the nail on the head. The compensation. The compensation is just not, it's not comparable in the region, and where our nurses and midwives migrate to. And no wonder we have a new crisis with hospital in my which is something we have been, you know, advocating for, and you know the need, and you don't have sufficient health professionals to place, and you know, so we're just in that crisis. So yes, the of nurse shortage on your patient care outcome. Yes, more medication errors, and an area that has been really a very sore point as well, not just for the healthcare professionals, but the people, the families. You know, when clients, when people come to hospital, and especially on the medical wards, especially the elderly, the seniors who are ambulant at home, or even bedridden at home, come to hospital, get admitted, they have no, and they go away from those bed sores.
Yes, let me go over to Dr.
So it is, it's just heartbreaking. You need, and even if you know technology, at this point in the 80s, when I started my nursing career, we lifted and turned patients manually. 30 years later, the nurses are still doing that, and they are stretched and burnt out. And I agree, I can tap myself on the back that I'm a very respectful and compassionate nurse. But it takes a lot for the ordinary person to be burnt out, overwhelmed, and for them not to shut down. Mm-hmm. And you don't have it, you can't give it. You know, and that is taking a serious toll on our nurses and our health workers. I remember shortly before or after Hurricane Maria, I don't remember now, I was the president of the Nurses Association, and we're carrying out a survey, you know, to find out you had to change mine. Oh, right. What would cause you to change your mind? If you're planning to migrate, what would cause you to change your mind? And you know what many of the nurses were saying? That the environment had become so toxic. So people are no longer running away only for better compensation. But the culture, the environment have become so toxic. People, for their mental health, for their sanity, people are running. So the combination of factors have skyrocketed. And, you know, the authorities have to do a lot and come real strong, you know, to turn around, to make a big shift. And for us to change the outcome, because unless the the people receiving this service and experience,
So Nurse Felix, I think we're having,
unless they can shout to boast, and of course there are a few people who boast, you know, about their experience, and because you know, they're honest, but it shouldn't be the exception, it should be the general rule.
Yes, and I think
listening to Untapped Potential with Dr. Simone. If you live in Canada, the US, and the UK, and are looking for Dominica products, including cocoa sticks, bay rum, coffee, soaps, crafts, and other popular Dominica items, then look no further. You can now shop on buydominicaonline.com, a secure, easy to navigate website selling a wide variety of Dominica made and Dominica inspired products. When you shop on buydominicaonline.com, you are helping to grow Dominica's economy. Go to buydominicaonline.com and enjoy home away from home.
were just listening to a portion of a program that we did last Wednesday on the state of the Dominica China Friendship Hospital and what is required to make it into the state-of-the-art hospital that we are hearing that it ought to be. So as we continue along with the program, we want to look at our tip of the week. So let's go ahead and take a look at that. And today what we want to talk about is how to boost your energy to achieve your goals, because as the rest of the year is speeding along, you know, we might be exhausted at this point. We may have come up upon some frustrations, because when it comes to trying to achieve goals, there is always going to be a level of frustration. There's always going to be a level of disappointment where what you expected, maybe from trying to contact someone, it was not fruitful, where you received tons of no's. And we always have to put things into perspective, because I always think to myself, as we receive those no's, it is kind of moving us one step closer to a yes, right? So you may have received 1,000 no, but I just keep thinking, hey, it is one step closer to getting a yes. So we look today at how to boost your energy, because that is what it takes to achieve those important goals that we have set out for ourselves. So this is coming to us from fullfocus.co. So it's fullfocus.co. And the title is the article is entitled Boost Your Energy to Achieve Your Goals. And it is brought to us by Rachel Rowney. So let's see what the article says. Let's scroll along a little bit. It says, Rudolph Waldo Emerson once proclaimed, the world belongs to the energetic. Well, Mr. Emerson didn't have to navigate the many complexities of 21st century life, but his statement still holds true. How many of us feel that mind afternoon slump, a flop into bed exhausted, but unable to fall asleep until midnight, juggling our seemingly endless personal and professional responsibilities can lead us to feel burnt out and depleted. Burning the candle at both ends has mental and physical health implications, and it also inhibits our ability to achieve our goals. Whether you want to beat your time in a 10K or secure that bonus at work, your aspirations are hampered by low energy. Who has said to themselves, I just don't have the time to go for a run every day, or I can't make healthy meals for lunch, it's too much effort. We'll let you into a little secret. It's all about shifting your mindset. Productivity equals energy management, not time management. Do you have the capacity for your goals? You just need the right. You do have the capacity for your goals. You just need the right fuel to push them. Discover the 4 simple methods to boosting your energy and enhancing your productivity. Method 1, fuel your energy. Most parents make sure their children eat breakfast before heading off to school. Professional athletes know to fuel up before a big game. As humans, we can't run on empty. Eating well, drinking water, and getting enough sleep are key components in boosting your energy levels. If you have a busy day, keep snacks on hand. Have time for a 20-minute nap? Take it. In order to be your most productive self, you need to prioritize your physical health. My apologies for that. I simply had to turn off my alarm that was going off in another room. So let's get back to what we were talking about. All right. So method 2, embrace the workday, shut down ritual. Have you ever arrived at the end of the day only to feel like you have a ton of loose ends? Or worse, You can't sleep because you keep remembering things you have to do. These are daily energy drainers. You need a hard stop to your day in order to relax in the evening, which is where a work day shutdown ritual comes in. Full Focus Planner users will know that the workday shutdown is an incredible tool that encourages you to sit back, take stock of the day, and transition out of work mode. In just a few minutes, you'll feel more in control of your time. Haven't bought your Full Focus Plan yet? You can download a template. So they're telling you about this product that they're selling. So again, if you're interested, it's on fullfocus.co. Again, method 3, take a break with the 10-10-10 rule. We've all felt that sigh of relief when you head outside for a moment to take a break from your screen. Many of us spend hours in front of our computers and arrive at the end of the day feeling depleted with tired eyes. This is where the 10-10-10 rule comes into play. Every 10 minutes, look at something 10 feet away, or at least for at least 10 seconds. This refreshes your eyes, defogs your brain, and helps your vision. Try today and see how it boosts your brain power and productivity. Method 4, connect with someone or yourself. Are you an extrovert or an introvert? Learning this can be the key piece of energy management puzzle. If you're an extrovert, you're revitalized by speaking or connecting with something else. However, introverts, like me, tend to feel energized following some alone time. So very true. Think you're somewhere in the middle. You may be an ambivert. Oh, interesting. Never heard that one before. You may be an ambivert. So try a mix of the two. Finding connections in your daily life will also remind you of your why. From watching your children play to spending time outside in your garden, take a moment to connect with someone or yourself and boost your energy levels. You do have the capacity for your goals. You just need the energy to achieve them. Wow, this is truly powerful. I really like this article. So it is from August 15th, 2023. So just a month ago. And again, the name of the article, Boost Your Energy to Achieve Your Goals. So some powerful information that I think that we can all relate to. So again, thank you for being here for another episode of Untapped Potential with Dr. Simone. This is where we come every Tuesday from 5:30 Eastern Standard Time to get powered up and energized for the week ahead and to remind ourselves of the important life goals that we have set out for ourselves and what are we doing to achieve those goals. So again, it is always great to be in your company, to spend this time with you, to be on this journey with you. And for more information in terms of everything that we do to try to advance the Caribbean, to try to advance our people, and to celebrate where we come from, you can head on over to pushpast10.com, pushpast10.com for more information. And if you've missed any episodes of Untapped Potential, you can click on the media tab and look for Untapped Potential, and it will take you to all the past episodes of Untapped Potential. Don't forget, we are on YouTube at Push Past 10, and we are also on Facebook at Push Past 10. And we are so grateful because our audience continues to grow on Facebook. And at last check, we were over 100,000 visitors a month on Facebook. So we are truly grateful for this. And we're using it as an opportunity to teach everyone about the important role that social media plays with, regards to advancing their business. So if you have a small business and you're struggling to gain customers, social media is a great way to do so. But so many people are still afraid of social media. So you may want to contact me at pushpast10@gmail.com, pushpast10@gmail.com, so I can walk you through how to engage on social media. And if you're too busy to do it, I can do it for you as well. So again, thank you for being here for another episode of Untapped Potential. I look forward to being in your company next week at the same time. So don't forget, your life story is your strength. The challenges you're faced in the past have prepared you for any challenges that you face today. So remember to stay engaged, stay positive, stay active, and stay energized until we meet again right back here on TDN Radio. You have yourself a productive week. Take care.